This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. This fall, the Macaulay School and Eastlake Elementary here in Chattanooga joined a multilingual program to improve childhood literacy. J.T. Wu, who graduated from Macaulay in 2012, is the founder and executive director of Preface, a nonprofit in Atlanta. Through Preface, students at Macaulay who are studying Spanish are reading and talking in English with Hispanic students at Eastlake whose English is their second language. I spoke with J.T. Wu, Frank Watkins, a Spanish teacher and head of Macaulay's language department, and Emily Clegg, the parent volunteer coordinator at Eastlake. J.T., Emily, Frank, thanks for joining us.
Nice to be here.
Thank you, Ray. Yeah, great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us more about how this multilingual literacy program was created.
I grew up in Gwinnett County, Georgia, which is an incredibly diverse community, you know, over a million plus people, kind of in the heart of Metro Atlanta. But 20 to 30 years ago, when my folks first graduated from Ole Miss and they put their roots down in this community, it wasn't necessarily that diverse. And so, you know, just to put things into perspective, here in Gwinnett, one of our local high schools, there are over 80 countries represented just in that student body alone. And so, you know, with that incredible diversity and that incredible multilingualism, also comes a pretty unique set of challenges. And so these are things that aren't just unique to diverse areas like Gwinnett. We're a microcosm, I think, of some of the rapid diversification that's happening all across America. And so, you know, here in Gwinnett alone, we saw 57% of our kids that weren't reading English proficiently by the time that they got to the third grade. And believe it or not, you know, that's actually better than the national average, which the Department of Education says 63% of our kids nationwide aren't reading English proficiently by the time they get to the third or the fourth grades. And so there's this rising illiteracy crisis in America. And a lot of times students or parents or teachers, we think they get unfairly blamed for a lot of this stuff. In reality, it's not their fault at all. You know, these are teachers going above and beyond to really care for their students and provide for them. You know, if parents are having to work, you know, one or two jobs just to make ends meet, or maybe English isn't being spoken in the home, it can be incredibly difficult for young kids to learn both English and the curricula that they're being taught in class at the same time. And so from our perspective, we saw that. And what we saw was it was really about having resources, right? In particular, peer-to-peer resources that we could provide to our teachers that they were already clamoring for to help them just kind of bridge those comprehension gaps into the classrooms. And so getting those into the hands of educators, training pre-existing resources within communities like high school students who want to serve, who have these language capabilities like the ones at Macaulay, and then giving them the tools and the resources that they need to be beacons of light and serving in these elementary schools like what we're doing with Eastlake. That's kind of the model that we've created, and we're really excited to be launching in Chattanooga as well as communities across the country.
And JT, you are a graduate of Macaulay. And Frank, this partnership between Preface and Macaulay and Eastlake, this is a first not only for Chattanooga, but also for Tennessee.
Yeah, and first for Macaulay in terms of the literacy program. Macaulay and Eastlake already had a relationship through some interpreting work that I got going with students. I would use students, upper level talented students, to help the teachers with parent interviews or parent conferences a few times a year. And so when JT came to me with the proposal to launch Preface here, it just seemed really like a continuation of the relationship that we already had going with Eastlake. So I was really excited about getting another way for my students to get involved in serving the community and possibly using their Spanish in some way beyond the classroom.
And Emily, that brings us to you at Eastlake. Tell us more about your role in this.
So like Frank mentioned, Macaulay and Eastlake have had a relationship for many years where the students have come and helped us with interpreting, especially for parent conferences. Different clubs there have been involved in different programming here at Eastlake. When JT reached out to Frank about Preface and bringing it here to Chattanooga, we were just honored to be able to be a part of that and find another way that Macaulay and Eastlake could partner together. We know our students benefit from those relationships, meaningful relationships, and that's something that Preface offers our kids.
And to make this approach work, you've all had to navigate this pandemic as educators.
Right. When we first started talking, the idea was that Macaulay students would be here on campus meeting face to face with kids. And then after March, we had to rethink all of that. So we've had to find ways to connect virtually. But it's been an added gift because it has been able to include some of our students who are doing HCS at home in a way that they wouldn't have been able to participate with Preface before.
I would also add that it's added a level of flexibility even for my students or Macaulay students who are really busy. They've got very busy schedules. And so being virtual cuts down the travel time and just gives them a flexibility of when they can actually do this 30-minute session, the reading tutoring session. They've got guys doing it in the morning, during free periods, during the day, sometimes in the afternoon. So the flexibility is working well.
On behalf of kind of preface, you know, working with the Macaulay and the Eastlake teams has been, you know, incredible. I mean, they've been incredibly flexible. And from our perspective, you know, we were blessed at the start of the entire pandemic to really be able to leverage connections, you know, these personal relationships that we have with educators just like this, to figure out how we could leverage technology and these innovative solutions, you know, if that's virtual secure video conferencing, if that's, to Frank's point, being much more flexible throughout the day to make sure that these small group reading sessions, these relational mentoring sessions are actually happening in a way that works for not only the high schooler, but also for the teachers on the ground in the elementary school. And so it's an interesting silver lining, I guess, of kind of these challenging times that we live in. But we've been really grateful to be working with them to kind of mitigate learning loss through these times.
And you've just launched this program. What is the timeline for the rest of this year going into the rest of the school year in 2021?
For us, we're just excited to get the ball rolling right now, because in our initial pilot programs here in Georgia, and what we've already started to see, I think, with many of the students in Tennessee, are that having these relational mentorships and relational engagements has been really, really beneficial for them. From a reading level perspective, all the kids in our pilot programs went from functionally illiterate at the start of the year to reading on track or above grade level during their time with us. And in some cases, that was even, you know, as quick as just 10 weeks. And so to get the ball rolling here, taking advantage of the time that we have global conditions permitting to start getting these relationships fostered on the ground between Macaulay and Eastlake, we're really excited for it. I think as we look to the future, we're taking the weeks day by day. And I could see Emily kind of smiling and nodding her head there, as, you know, Hamilton County Schools, obviously none of us can control that process. But for us, we're secure and virtual, and we can make these mentorships work as long as we have the network and the capabilities and the dedication from the students and the teachers themselves. And it seems like all intents are showing that we're going to have that in spades.
Like you mentioned, the virtual aspect has given us a sense of consistency throughout the school year. We don't know what's to come and if we'll always be in the school building, but working with Macaulay and Preface has been virtually has allowed us to do that. Even if we were to close, those relationships can continue. So we're just looking forward for that and our kids getting to know their ambassadors better and seeing the gains that they make.
From our side, I've got a team of ambassadors. I think we're around 20 or so students now. Mm-hmm. And more have filtered in because they've heard great things about what their friends are saying. They want to be a part of it. And we're just ready to continue with these reading tutorial sessions as they need to happen and as they can happen. Our students kind of get the fact that giving to the community, I mean, it's something that the school teaches anyway. It's a part of kind of the character building element that Macaulay does. They understand that this investment in a young learner is priceless. It makes tremendous difference in the life of another person.
And for more information about all this, where can people go online?
Happy to direct them to, you know, our Preface website. It's www.prefaceproject.org. You can find kind of an overview of our model, our mission. The way that we crafted this was really in conjunction with expert educators, you know, not just here in the South, but all across the country. And so we're excited to be contributing to the national conversation around early childhood literacy. We're blessed to have a great base of supporters supporting our work, not just here in Tennessee, but all across the country. And we'll actually be holding, global conditions permitting, a little bit of a fundraiser event in April as well in Chattanooga. So, you know, hosting Frank, hosting Emily, some of our ambassadors, and hopefully some representatives from the Chattanooga, you know, business and educational community as well. So yeah, head to prefaceproject.org. You can follow us on our social media pages and keep you up to date on the latest. We're expanding to 7 states across the country now and continuing to have those conversations. So we're just blessed to be welcomed into these communities with open arms, and we're excited about the future.
All right, JT, Emily, Frank, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. You're welcome.
Community groups here in the Chattanooga area have been working together to launch virtual learning centers for Hamilton County students at urban churches affiliated with the group Kingdom Partners. The Reverend William Terry Ladd is pastor at First Baptist Church on East 8th Street. Dr. Ladd, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Ray.
Tell us more about this partnership of virtual learning centers.
Of course, when COVID hit initially last year, the end of the school year was pretty much put on hiatus for Hamilton County Schools and the rest of the country as it relates to students in school. there was some difficulty with students coming back to school in Hamilton County in August and September of this year, 2020. As a matter of fact, there were about 900 students plus that they had not heard from since March, from March until August of September. Dr. Towns approached us, and there was some concern about children or students in the fluent communities. Parents were setting up learning pods for those students to lower the amount of students in a specific area and also to give them some adequate instruction and also technology supervision. However, in the lower income areas and financially challenged areas, economically challenged areas, that would be very difficult. One, because the parents, many of them were frontline workers and working in essential businesses, and they just didn't have the adequate access to Wi-Fi and technology that they needed to be successful. So Kingdom Partners, Oliver Richmond and his group had some conversation about starting these virtual learning centers in urban churches to serve those students in the community who were in need, whose parents were working, and also whose parents may not have been able to afford to have someone come in and work with their students, work with their children while they were working.
You're talking about providing them space. You're also talking about feeding these children during the day and also making sure that those spaces are adequately cleaned day after day.
It is an undertaking from 7:40 to 2:40 each day. We have 12 students in one center and 8 students in another center. We currently have 2 centers open. We do have to make sure they're adequately cleaned every day. We make sure that they have social distancing while they're there. We actually had to go in and put a business line to be able to handle 20 plus devices at the same time in our facility. We've hired teachers, former teachers, certified teachers, and also teachers, students who are at UTC studying to be teachers in the UTC School of Education. So it's really been a collective effort with the whole community to try to pull all of these resources together. The Enterprise Center has been great in helping us fill in the gaps with our technology. So it really has been a community effort in trying to put this together to make sure that our children are safe and also that they're thriving educationally and academically through this COVID environment.
What are some of the things that you and your colleagues have learned in just setting this up, keeping it up and running day after day?
It is an exercise in faith. We applied for the CARES Act money through the Tennessee CARES Act that came to Chattanooga. I think it was $21 million came to Chattanooga to help for COVID relief efforts. We were not able to secure that money, but because of several individuals in our community who really saw that we had put this together and they thought it would be really valuable for the children in our community, they stepped up and donated. Several foundations in the city and a church in the city stepped up and really gave us sizable donations, grants to really help the children. And we've learned that you have to move in faith, and those great efforts that people see that they're doing, they will really step up and help you. It's been an exercise in faith.
What are you and your colleagues focused on as we reach the end of the year, Christmas, New Year's, and into early 2021?
There will be virtual learning next semester. All of our students that we're currently serving have registered for the next semester. We're looking at not only providing them a place for learning, but we want our next phase is to see some growth in their learning. So we want to make sure that we're at least keeping them on level or moving them above a grade level. We're taking some efforts right now, talking with the principals and the teachers, meeting about what are some of the things that we did well this semester and what are some of the challenges that we may have next semester. So we want it to be as good or better than going in-person learning.
And there's a social aspect to this too, because we've heard about children learning at home and isolated, and the ability to just come to one of these virtual centers. They still have to learn under these conditions, but they're not alone when they're doing it.
The social aspect, that's one of the things that we've seen. It was almost when the kids came to the center, their whole demeanor changed. You know, they light up, they're with their classmates, and in some cases, they get to meet students from other schools or students from other grades that they may not have been able to interact with during their school year. So it has really been a really big help to them socially, I think emotionally, psychologically, and physically. I think it's really been great for them to be able to come to this place that they not only can get the internet that they need and the supervision that they need, educational supervision that they need, but they can also come and see their friends, interact with their friends socially. They argue just like they would in school about who gets the ball and whose turn it is.
But so, that's healthy.
And that's healthy. That is healthy. It is definitely healthy. It is healthy. So it's a place of normalcy for them. And the parents have expressed, you know, they're really thankful for the Virtual Learning Center because many of them, you know, they had to work and then some of them did not have the technological capabilities to help their students virtually, how to submit their assignments. So they just thank us each day for providing a place for them, for their children to come to learn. And it's safe and they don't have to actually go back into the building at risk of contracting COVID.
And for people listening who want more information, who want to be able to help, where can they go online? Where can they call?
They can go to Kingdom Partners, Kingdom Partners, I believe it's kingdompartners.org, or they can email us directly at fbccares@gmail.com.
All right. Dr. Ladd, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. More in a moment.
This is Scenic Roots. This afternoon we have the second part of a two-part recital, Live in Barking Legs, by the gifted guitarist Alan Chicot. The set he played for this virtual show is a lengthy meditation on the music that has inspired him, along with his beautifully realized takes on a range of classic compositions. The second part of the set opens with a medley of songs written by Antonio Carlos Jobim. Thank you.
interesting character in the jazz world in that I'm going to step out on a dangerous limb here in saying this, but if I really want to hear the best versions of, say, Duke Ellington or Billy Strayhorn, you know, I typically don't go back to the source. You know, I don't go back to old crunchy acetate records of Duke Ellington playing piano. I'd probably rather hear a modern player, you know, with just the advances in the technique and harmony and musicianship and everything. Not that the old stuff's not great, but Joe Beam's records are interesting in that the records he made in the 60s, 70s, and 80s are just the best these tunes could ever be played. I mean, even a simple tune like Wave, which a million people have played and recorded, very few people know the original recording as well as they should, in my opinion, because it's hard to top. So go to the source, listen to Joe Beam playing his own music. It's fantastic. And singing. You know, he's not the greatest singer in the world, but singing his own songs and accompanying himself with piano or guitar. He was no slouch on guitar. Okay, so I'd like to do something a bit different here. I'm going to do something that I've liked to do as a classical guitar player for a long time, since I was really young. Like, I'm talking middle school and high school. I was always obsessed with programming sets of short, like, sketches or fragments or short pieces. A lot of the 20th century literature for classical guitars, atonal and avant-garde literature, tends to be like that. And I think it helps make the more abstract pieces a little bit more digestible, maybe, for the average audience. But I was always really into that idea. And also, probably a very formative piece I was introduced to was, of course, the famous Gymnopédie by Erik Satie. Everybody knows that piece, but not enough people know that there's actually three of them in a set. And they all sound very similar, I think, by design. And I've heard some musicologists and people that are really into Satie's music say that it's kind of like the artistic equivalent of kind of the same sculpture, the same painting from three different angles, or the artistic technique called a triptych, three paintings that sort of go together in a set. That's kind of how I've always thought about those. It's always kind of been fascinating to me, and I think an effective way to program some more abstract avant-garde pieces. Not that these are going to be super abstract, but this is probably the most abstract of anything I'm going to play tonight. I want to play a set of three short pieces, and the catch here is, while I'm a classical musician coming to jazz from that background, these are going to be three quasi-classical pieces written by jazz guitarists. Actually, two guitarists and one bass player, a bass guitarist. So I'm going to start with a piece by the great bass player Jaco Pastorius. This is a piece called Portrait of Tracy, which is actually the first arrangement I ever made for the guitar. Portrait of Tracy by Jaco Pastorius. I'll follow that with Peaceful Journey by Joe DiOrio, fantastic guitar player, who's a really, really avant-garde player who happened to write this beautiful romantic classical piece, which is fun. It's a Peaceful Journey. And I'll end that set with Letter from Home by Pat Metheny. Thank you. next I'm going to really reach, now that I'm nice and warmed up and sweating. This goes out to my good friend and colleague, Mr. Sean Perkinson, friend of all of ours here at Barking Legs, a phenomenal guitarist, Mr. Sean Perkinson. Sean has a quality that all of the finest musicians that I know have, which is no matter how much of a master you are in your main discipline, you're always kind of interested in what everybody else is doing and other sort of sub-disciplines and different styles of music and different kinds of guitar in this case. And Sean has definitely always been very musically curious, I think, in that way, and is a phenomenal rock player and country player in addition to being the finest jazz guitar player that I know. Sean's been taking the plunge and taking some classical guitar this semester, which has been interesting. And specifically, he's been studying some jazz music arranged for classical guitar, and it's been really fun to help coach my friend Sean with that. One of the tunes we've been looking at is a great Bill Evans classic called Waltz for Debbie. There's a wonderful arrangement which I'm going to attempt to play for you tonight. It probably needs a little practice, to be honest, but it's spontaneous. This is an arrangement by a guitarist named Ralph Towner, who's recorded for ECM Records for many years since the 70s, had a very popular, well, popular by jazz standards, group called Oregon in the 70s, did a lot of records, plays classical and 12-string acoustic guitar, and it's kind of what he's known for. A lot of people don't realize that he's actually a piano player, first and foremost, in the Bill Evans style. He didn't start playing guitar until later in his 20s. He's kind of become a guitar player more than a piano player, which is interesting. But it would make perfect sense that someone who plays in the Bill Evans piano style would arrange a Bill Evans tune for classical guitar, given that he plays both. So Sean and I have been studying this arrangement of Waltz for Debbie, and we kind of looked at it and decided one of the only problems with it is that he just arranged the melody, just once through the form, just the head, we would say, in jazz lingo, needed a solo section. So I told Sean, I said, well, I'll just write one. And so I stayed up that night and wrote a solo section out. And I don't think either of us can quite do it justice yet. It's quite difficult. It needs practice. So I'm going to hesitate in some places, and I'll probably screw up. But it's okay. I'd like to share this brand new addition to this wonderful Ralph Towner arrangement. So just kind of inserting my own solo section into this tune. Thank you.
Alan Chicot from Barking Legs. If you missed the first half of this virtual show, it's up on our website. Barking Legs hosts a virtual jazz show every Wednesday evening, starting at 8, on their Wednesday Night Jazz Facebook page. Singer and pianist Nancy Westmoreland is the featured act tomorrow evening. This will be the last Wednesday Night Jazz show from Barking Legs until the new year. Next week, we will have a set recorded in Barking Legs by the Alan Wyatt Quartet here on Scenic Roots on listener-supported public radio.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.